Sampradaya Krishna Prasara Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaratana Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Vana Pracharane Yavasisha Samadhi Pracharane. It's my homeopathic remedy. Jamuna Jal. I have some for everyone, but not right now. Homa Gantiyanda Sya Janjana Salakaya Chakshu Sumiratan Jena Tasmai Sri Gravenamam Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stokitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Bhakadamayam Vedati Sapanam. Vansa Kalpa Tuvyascha Kripa Sanya Vayavacha Patitam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavimam. This is the first time I've ever tried to use one of these during a type of a retreat type of class. And I have a kind of anxiety. And that is the obvious, that everyone's going to want to look over there, but I'm going to want you to look over there and hear simultaneously. Now, I don't know how you can do that, but we'll try. But if I see everyone's mind is over there, I'll suggest that you can look in this direction.
You can press the hide button and then they can't see that.
Can I press the hide button and I also disappear? You want to try? That's a good one. Okay. Oh, that could solve the problem. So this particular retreat seminar, let's see, down means the next one. Let's see, we'll find out now. No, maybe it's up. Well, if you could maybe just move a little something. Didn't seem to work. But, oh, yeah, it sort of did. I'll be safe. Cool. Just move up a little bit. Yeah, that'll work. It's called Knowledge, Surrender, and
Devotion.
What a nice combination, actually, because knowledge brings, ultimately, surrender to Krishna. And that surrender to Krishna brings devotion. Yes. And what we're going to be doing is studying three parts of three different chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. The first of the sections is from the 15th chapter. Does anyone know the title of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Yes. Translated into English? Yes. The yoga of the Supreme Person. How to connect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And right at the end of that chapter, of the 15th chapter, there's a very, very hidden and secret section that summarizes in three verses the entirety of the Vedanta Sutra. And that is what we're going to look at in the first class. In the second class, or actually it's going to be the fourth class, 1, 2, 3. Yes. In the 10th chapter. What's the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita called? Does anyone know? Yes. It's knowledge of the Absolute Truth. And within that chapter, there's a confidential section of four verses, which is the Chatusloki Bhagavad Gita, or the whole Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks it in four verses. He summarizes everything in four verses, and we shall go over that in one class, Krishna willing. And if not, It's going to stretch on and on and on for many days, and we'll go onward into our time in Melbourne as well, the temple. And the third section of Bhagavad Gita is just right at the end, the conclusion of Krishna's teachings, which are the, in some senses, the most important verses, because Krishna tells exactly what he wants of the living entity of Arjuna and every living entity. And this one, what's the most famous verse within that third section? Yes, I want to hear the whole verse, not just the first line. Mame kam ham. Very good. Let's see. Is it? Yes, it even has a little laser pointer there. Okay. Now, but we're not going to study these immediately, as fate has it. We're going to have an introductory class, because we want to, this is today's class, an introduction to the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. There's supposed to be some sound, but I don't hear it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, now I can hear it. Maybe I can turn it down a little bit. Yes. Now, this particular thing. Yes. So this particular class is an introduction. Or who is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita? Everyone knows. Who is it? It's Krishna. But, yes. What happened? Press again. If this thing doesn't work, it goes from depressed. No, it gets depressed. There he is. Now this is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. When we think of the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, we usually think of Parthasarathi. We think of Krishna upon the chariot of Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But actually and ultimately, it is the supreme and most beautiful personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is speaking. And he has a purpose of his speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna for everyone's benefit. And that is to bring each and every one of us, but not only each and every one of us, but to bring every soul to his lotus feet. And where are his lotus feet situated? Vrindavanam prityaja padam ekam nagacchati. They are only situated in one place, and that one place is Sri Vrindavan Dham. So to bring us to Vrindavan, Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Now, to find out who this Krishna is, to find out something. Oh, what happened? Now it's decided to go ahead. I want you to go back. It's being very independent minded over here. One more back. Yes. We're going to hear, understand more about who Krishna is, how he is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even when he looks like this. So beautiful, playing his flute with his beautiful lotus eyes and soft lotus feet. He is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He looks like this, but he's still the unlimited Lord. So to understand this point, we are going to hear Brahma's description of Lord Krishna. Because Brahma, being the supreme person within this universe, is most intelligent. And we'll hear what he says about Krishna from the 10th canto, the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now this canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is very special. What is it compared to in relationship to Krishna's body? Not yes, his smiling face. Because if you see this face of Krishna, you will also smile. If you enter, just like when you see someone who's in a very, very happy mood and smiling, you can't help yourself. You have to smile also. So similarly, if we can contact properly the smiling face of Krishna, our true selves shall smile like it has never smiled before, because our true nature will come out. In this material world, everyone must be miserable. It is just the very nature of this material world. It is a place of misery. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. And we try to manipulate the material world and get something that we think that we need and push away something that we think we don't want, as if this pushing and pulling, icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata, as if this pushing and pulling is going to make us happy. But Krishna himself says that it will not make us happy. We can even go up to the position of Lord Brahma, the most powerful controller of the universe, and we still will not be happy. And even if we remain in any position in the material world, and we somehow or another glimpse the smiling face of Krishna, in other words, if we develop our relationship with Krishna, then who we really are will blossom and we shall smile. So let's hear what Brahma says. Maybe you can move those, just because there's a little sensor on there. And maybe it'll be more cooperative, yes. So before we hear what Brahma says, we'll have to hear some... a little bit before. You want to take this with you? Okay. So Brahma, this is from the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. This is Lord Krishna. And what's happening? There's a great asura, a great demon named Agasura. And he has decided to kill Krishna because Krishna has killed his brother and his sister. What was Agasura's sister's name? Putana. And brother? Bakasura. So he, using his incredible mystic powers, he disguised himself as a huge python in Vrindavan, and he opened up his mouth wide. So he looked, his mouth looked like a mountain cave. And he desired all the boys and all the cows to enter in his mouth, and then he would kill them in revenge. Now, do you think Krishna wanted the boys to enter the mouth of this snake? They thought, the boys thought, that the snake was a mountain cave. But Krishna knew that it was a terrible, what's the Sanskrit word for python? Ajagara, I think. Ajagara. He knew it was a snake. So do you think that Krishna wanted the boys to enter within the mouth of this snake?
No.
All those who think no, raise your hand. All those who think Krishna wanted them to enter into the snake, raise your hand. Yes, only. I knew you would. Anyone who wears a chartreuse glove, what would happen? Now, actually, Krishna did not want them to enter. Actually. But the boys, they wanted to enter because they were thinking, let Krishna perform some pastime to save us. They wanted to enjoy being saved by Krishna. So the boys wanted to enter, and Krishna didn't want them to enter. And the boys entered. This is quite amazing, because the definition of God is that He is all powerful. And yet, His power wasn't sufficient to stop the boys from entering, because the boys had a desire. Krishna's devotees had a desire to see some pastime. And Krishna's own lila shakti, his own personal potency for arranging pastimes, it arranged to overrule Krishna's desire so that Krishna would have the pastime of killing Agasura, and the boys would enter into the mouth of the demon. So Krishna stood outside of the mouth as the boys were entering, and he was amazed at how powerful and wondering and wondrously his lila shakti was working, his pastime potency was working. This is the spiritual world. Because just imagine this concept of God, the all-pervading, the all-knowing controller, nothing could surprise him at any time. He would be lacking the ability to be surprised. And then he would be lacking something, and by definition, the Absolute Truth cannot lack anything. So this concept of Krishna, or this understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the Absolute Truth, is so wonderful and so complete, it even allows this Supreme Person, this most beautiful boy, to be ever surprised, even though he is all-knowing. He is all-knowing, but yet all his pastimes are unfolding in a new, ever-fresh way, even for him. So when Krishna did kill Agasura, he was sitting with his boys' friends, the cowherd boys, and they were sitting and taking lunch. And then Brahma, who had seen this little cowherd boy kill this powerful Agasura, he was astounded. Because after all, when we think about God, we don't conceive of him as that most beautiful boy who is so gentle and so soft, with the sweetest and sweetest of all smiles, with lotus feet. How is it possible to understand Krishna in that way, the Supreme Lord in that way? So Brahma, even though he is so intelligent, excuse me just for a moment, you can look at Krishna in that beautiful scene while I'm rummaging around this bag for him. Yes. So Brahma, it was very hard for him to understand and accept that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. So he wanted to test and see if it was true. So he stole away the cows and stole away the boys to see what Krishna would do. And what Krishna did was expand himself. Despite the fact that he has this little boy-like looking body, he is still always the supremely, unlimitedly powerful Lord. So he expanded himself into more cows and more boys. And then, yes. Now who's going to read that one? Nityananda Priya Prabhu.
One day Krishna and Balram were tending their calves. At the same time,
because they were only 5 years old at that time. They were too young to tend the cows. So they were just tending the calves. This is before Krishna had actually moved into Vrindavan. This is while he was moving. Near Krishna Balaram Mandir, this pastime took place. Yes.
At the same time, the cowherd men with the cows were atop the Govardhan Hill.
Or rather, that's where they were staying at that time. And then they were herding the cows near Govardhan Hill. And then, who's going to read this one? Did you raise your hand? Yes, please.
Suddenly, the cows looked down
Thank you. So what had happened was Krishna had expanded himself into the boys and the cows. So it wasn't the boys and the cows that were there, but it was Krishna's expansion there. And then on top of Govanand Hill, the cows and the fathers of the boys were there, and they looked down and they saw the calves and the boys. And they began rushing down because they were rushing out of great love to see Krishna. And they could not control themselves. They were so full of love for Krishna because Krishna is naturally the dearest to the heart of every living entity. So Balaram saw this, and he did not know up until that time that these weren't the cows and the boys. But he couldn't stop this from happening by his own power. And then he understood that these boys and these calves were not boys and calves. They were actually expansions of Krishna. And then it is just natural for every living entity to embrace Krishna, because Krishna is the most beloved. So soon after that, who will read this one? Glenn. Oops. This thing has its own desires. Yes.
Soon after Brahma returned.
Slowly and loudly.
Soon after Brahma returned, he was astounded that all the boys and calves were present with Krishna as they had been 1 year before.
Because he had stolen away the boys and calves. Then he came back after 1 year and they were still there. He didn't understand that these calves and boys were actually Krishna. So Brahma came. Yes, Mahatma Prabhu. You have to read.
Krishna then revealed to Brahma that these boys and calves were actually his own expansion.
And when Brahma saw that, and how Krishna did that, because there was Krishna standing, this beautiful boy, and then Krishna allowed, he showed Brahma that each and every one of those boys and calves, they showed their Vishnu forms. There's a mute on this somewhere, right? Turn off the sound. No? Okay. Yeah, turn it off. Yes. And Brahma saw before his eyes that those boys and calves, they assume forearm forms. And that they were being worshipped by every living entity within the universe, every Brahma, and even Brahmas from other universes were worshipping these forearm Vishnu forms. And these forearm forms were covered from their toes to their heads with tulsi leaves. And they had all opulences. And all opulences were worshipping them. And then all these forearm Vishnu forms then went back, changed their form to the boys and the calves, and Brahma could understand who he got a glimpse of who Krishna was, even though he was wandering around the Vrindavan without shoes, a village boy without shoes, just herding the calves. He still got a glimpse at that time of how unlimitedly powerful Krishna is. Because it's important before we hear those Bhagavad Gita verses to understand how unlimitedly powerful Krishna is. Now, when Brahma saw this realization, he saw Krishna turning into the Vishnu forms from the boys and the calves, he was astounded, because he had just stolen away the boys and the calves, and look who he was dealing with. He was dealing with the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Person. So therefore, he approached Krishna in a very, very fearful way, because he had just offended Krishna. And ultimately the acharyas say that his offense was even worse than the offense that Lord Indra had committed. Lord Indra had caused so much rainfall to fall upon Vrindavan, and of course this is after. And he tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan with rain. But yet, Indra's offense is considered less than Brahma's offense, because Brahma separated Krishna from his dearest devotees, the cowherd boys. And even though Krishna was playing during the whole year when Brahma was absent with those expansions of his who were disguised as cows and cowherd boys, he was still in his heart feeling separation from those actual cowherd boys, his dearest friends who loved him in that mood of in Sakiras. He was dealing with his own expansions, were unlimitedly powerful, and yet he was feeling separation from his friends like Sridham and Subodh, Madhumanga. This gives us some understanding, a deeper understanding of who Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is. He is not just an all-powerful controller, but no, he is Bhakta Vatsal, Bhakta Vatsalya Atma Parjanta Vadanyata. He gives himself to his devotees so completely that he misses them when they are not in his presence, even though he may be associating with his own expansions. He still misses his friends. So Brahma began to offer his prayers. And what I would like to do is read and discuss and read some of the commentaries, and we should all do this now. The first of Brahma's prayers, the first three actually of the prayers that he offered to Krishna. Now, the first one, he begins to offer his prayers. And the first prayer in the 14th chapter describes the inconceivable beauty of Krishna, because Krishna is Sadaishwarya Purna. He has all opulences to an unlimited degree. And one of his opulences is beauty. And just, because we can think of someone beautiful in this world, or from whatever we experience, we can think of beauty, what we consider beauty. But just try to conceive of what unlimited beauty is. There is beauty, and oh, everyone is attracted to something or someone beautiful, but unlimited beauty. No limit. That is Krishna. And Brahma saw that Krishna after having just seen him, or realized through his own experience that from Krishna, unlimited boys and Vishnu forms and had come, who were the worshipable objects of the whole world. Now Brahma saw again beautiful Krishna standing before him. And this was his first prayer has to do with that beauty that he saw. And here is it over here. Now it's long. It starts with Nomadyate. Nomidyate Abravapusha Tadirambaraya Gunjavitamsa Paripitsalasan Mukaya Vanye sraje kavala vitra vachana venu Lakshma sriya madupate pasupanga jaya. Lord Brahma said, this is his description of Krishna. My dear Lord, Nom Idya, Nomi means I offer my obeisances or prayers to you. Idya, you are the most worshipable object, indeed the only worshipable object. You are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. This is bhakti. Whatever one does for Krishna's pleasure is bhakti. And our problem in the material world is instead of doing things to please Krishna, our actions are made with ourselves in the center, and that is called selfishness, and that is not bhakti. And therefore it is not pleasing, yatma supasidati, because it is not pleasing to Krishna, it is not pleasing to us. So therefore he's offering his prayers to Krishna just to please him. O son of the king of the cowherds. Who is the king of the cowherds? Nanda Maharaj. Your transcendental body is dark blue, like a new cloud. And your garment is brilliant, like lightning. And the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja earrings. What is gunja? Sometimes it's translated as small conch shells. But what is gunja? Huh? It's not a flower, it's a little seed that is you see in Vrindavan. Do you still have those in Melbourne? The plant. And they come out with these little seeds that are red just around the time of Kartik, October, November. They come out with little seeds that are reddish, about this big, very, very small, with a black center. And Krishna takes those, or the residents of Vrindavan, they take them, and they fashion necklaces and earrings out of these. So Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, again, who is Sadaishwarya Puna, who has all opulences, all wealth, look what he is wearing. A necklace and earrings of these little beads. And he's wearing the peacock feather on your head. And wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves. And equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn and a flute. You stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. So this is what Brahma sees before him. The food is in Krishna's left hand. He's so acting like a village boy that he's holding the food in his left hand. Everyone knows that you don't hold food in your left hand. You keep it in your right hand. But Krishna is acting like such a village boy. He's holding the food in his left hand as he wanders around Vrindavan. And he has the stick and the bugle in his left armpit, and his flute is tucked in his waistband. And how could Brahma and peacock feather upon his head and the gunja berry and vanamala, the flowers from the forest, not even fancy roses and this and that, but just forest flowers. But yet, although Brahma could not understand Krishna's position in the beginning and wanted to test him, now he's seen that this all-attractive, most beautiful boy is unlimitedly beautiful. and unlimitedly powerful. Now, I would like to read some of the comments of the Acharyas on this verse. Some of them, just parts. Srila Sridhar Swami said, he says, in the 14th chapter, Brahma, bewildered because of his inability to understand the amazing and unprecedented events that have just occurred, how the boys were taken, and then the boys were still there, and the boys and cows then showed themselves to be form Vishnu forms, worshipped by the entirety of the universe. So, Brahma, unable to understand this, he offers his prayers to Lord Krishna. Sanatana Goswami says, O worshipable one, that means Idya, Noma Idya, the first word. Sri Chatamukha, who is Chatamukha? Lord Brahma. Having been shown extreme mercy by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is looking upon him, Krishna, as possessing the supremely attractive opulence of his personal form, qualities, and pastimes, and thus merging in the rasa of the highest stage of love of Godhead. Krishna is right before him. And seeing Krishna, his ecstasy increases to the highest degree. He, the soul, Brahma, because Brahma is a soul, a jiva, just like we are, but extremely pious. He is in relationship with Krishna, and his ecstasy goes to the transcendental limits. He merges in the rasa of the highest stage of love of God, and he offers prayers by describing, first of all, that form which he is directly seeing before him in the verse beginning, Nomi. O worshipable one, indicates that you alone are worthy of praise. Why? Why is Krishna alone worthy of praise? Because everyone else who is doing something praiseworthy is getting just the reflection of Krishna's potency. Say, I lift this. Now, this isn't very worthy of praise, certainly, but even this insignificant ability only happens by Krishna's grace, by the grace of God. Because if he removes it, I lose my ability. We are not independent. And this is a part of what the Bhagavatam wishes to teach us. We are not independent. Krishna bhule se jiva nadi bahimukh. We turn our back on Krishna, thinking that we are independent, that I can enjoy Ishwaraham, aham bhogi, siddham, balaman siddhi. But I can't. And nothing, and everyone in this world is looking, searching for the praise of others and the worship of others. But indeed, it is Krishna who is worshipable. Krishna and only Krishna. So you alone are worthy of praise, Srila Sanatana Goswami explains the mood of Brahma in this way. Not Brahma, not myself, Brahma, nor the Lord of Vaikuntha, even Lord Narayan, nor even any of your other incarnations and other expansions, because Brahma didn't even worship the Lord Narayan Vishnu forms. He wanted to worship their source, Krishna, even though Krishna was sitting there as a coward boy, with gunja earrings, with no shoes, with food in his left hand. This is the independent, all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. He alone can do exactly as he likes. So no one else is worshipable, because I see that within you, the Supreme Absolute Truth and the source of all incarnations is the actual origin of all incarnations. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. For what purpose? for the purpose of achieving you. Really achieving you, he means achieving love for you. And what love for Krishna means is loving service to Krishna. That's part of Sanatan Goswami's comment. Srila Jiva Goswami, a very, very short comment. Thus, even after having seen the numerous forearm forms, Brahma decides that the lotus feet of Sriman Nandanandana in his human-like form are the actual supreme goal. And he begins to offer his prayers, in particular to that form, to that Krishna form, that beautiful form. He offers his prayers and obeisances to him. Now, I'd like to read also the comments of Srila Vishwanatha Bhagavati Thakur. But maybe we can open up some more windows. Well, part of Vishwanatha's comments. Now Brahma, please listen very carefully. Now Brahma has directly realized that Nandanandana is the source of all forms of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And having attained firm devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, Brahma profusely praises the Lord, saying, "My dear Vasudeva," Vasudeva means the all-pervading one, "Krishna is there, standing, and yet he is all-pervading. If I am everywhere in this room, I can't be sitting here at the same time. Like a piece of paper ripped up into thousands of pieces, I throw that paper everywhere, and the original paper is gone. When something material becomes all-pervading, it loses its localized ability to be localized. But not Krishna, because he's not material. He is all-pervading. But yet, there he is standing before Brahma. You are the source of countless forms, and you are the only worshipable Lord, Idya. You are glorified by everyone in the universe, from me down to the grass. In order to attain you, I offer these praises to you." One time, I asked Srila Prabhupada, perhaps one of the first questions I ever asked Prabhupada relates to this. Well, he says, Brahma says that every living entity is worshipping Krishna. Well, I know some living entities who aren't worshipping Krishna, me being one of them. What does Brahma mean by that? I didn't ask that to Prabhupada. But Prabhupada said, but it has to do with that point, Prabhupada had said that everyone worships Krishna. So I said, he said, you either worship him directly or indirectly. So I said, well, if everyone worships Krishna, directly or indirectly, it's probably more easy if I stay worshiping him indirectly. What's the problem? Why do I have to undergo the rigors of becoming a devotee when I'm worshiping Krishna anyway? I didn't put it so dramatically to Prabhupada. But I said, why do we have to become devotees if everyone worships Krishna either directly or indirectly? So Prabhupada answered in a very short, simple, and direct way. If you worship Krishna directly, you become happy. And if you worship him indirectly, thinking you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that you're the center of everything, it's going to be quite a shock when the universe decides it's not going to cooperate with you, as the universe always does. Because we are not the center. We don't want to worship Krishna by trying to be the enjoyer of prakriti. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janiha karanam guna sangasya sarasa joni jamasu. Only suffering comes to us that way. If we worship him directly with devotion, placing him in the center, then like Brahma, the heart becomes filled with ecstasy. If we worship him indirectly, really consciously not worshipping him at all, trying to enjoy, but serving his Maya Shakti. And if we think it's hard to obey what Krishna wants, it's thousands of times more difficult to obey what Maya wants. I saw 1 year ago, I saw a sign when I was in Perth. It was an advertisement for some soft drink, maybe Sprite. It said, had a picture of the Sprite. It said, "Obey your thirst." Obey your thirst, obey your hunger, obey your, I want this, obey that mind's desire, I want to achieve, I want this, I want to control this, I want all the people don't like me to die, anyone who gets in my way, obey. All these crazy things we have to obey. But ultimately, I want to live forever, but this body is going to disappoint us so much. We have to obey the laws of material nature, whether we like it or not. And not only do we have to obey, because every parent, for their own children, they only want good, and they don't want anything bad to happen. But we have to obey the laws of material nature that say, no, the material world doesn't teach in that way. Bad must happen. Even the children of our children's children will die. Bad must happen. The good will happen, but the bad will happen. We have to serve and obey the laws of the material nature, the material energy. Mama Maya Dratyaya. We cannot stop it. The universe simply will not cooperate with our plan, our imaginary feeling that I am the center of existence. When you're young and see your whole life stretched in front of you with so many dreams, I'm going to do this and become that, but it doesn't happen like that. Except in little story books that you read when you are under 5 years old. It doesn't happen like that. We have to obey the law of material nature, and the universe will not cooperate. Because the universe is under Krishna's control, ultimately. Maya Dakshina Prakriti. Because it wants to teach us something. And what it wants to teach us is what Brahma has learned, that, oh Krishna, you are the worshipable object. And listen, look at that first simple thing that he said. I offer my obeisances just to please you. You're the only worshipable Lord. And the message of Krishna consciousness is so simple that we should try to please Krishna. We should place Krishna in the center. Not keep ourselves in the center as if we were really the center. We are not the center. We are tiny. We are insignificant. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur continues, in order to attain you, I offer these praises to you, attain love for you, service to you. Or, he continues, simply to please you. I glorify you in this verse. Just not even to attain Krishna, just to bring Krishna some pleasure. Krishna consciousness is very, very simple if one's heart is simple. To please Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure, please accept this. I'm bringing you patram pushpam palam, just a leaf with the desire to please you, just some water, some fruit, and Krishna snami paratamana, I take it, I accept it, because it's given with the desire to please him. And Krishna accepts those things offered with devotion. Just to please you, I glorify in this verse. Your transcendental body, which is dark blue like a fresh rain cloud, is wrapped in a garment more brilliant than lightning. So beautiful. Brahma's words describing Krishna suggest two things. The earth gets relief from the scorching heat of summer through the cloud of Krishna's rain. Because Krishna is dark blue, he says, like a rain cloud. So there are, in the verses of Bhagavatam, there are many hidden, very deep meanings. So one reason why Krishna is dark like that is because just like when there's heat, the cloud, the rain cloud, gives relief to everyone. And especially the Tathaka bird. So he says, the earth gets relief from the scorching heat of summer through the clouds of Krishna's rain. And the Tathaka bird-like devotees sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain cloud of Krishna. What did that last line? What did Brahma say? What did Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur say? What sustains the devotee's life? Please listen. I'll read it again. One sentence. The Tathaka bird, like the devotees, the Tathaka bird has, by its very nature, it will not drink water from, it will only drink water from one source. When the rain is pouring from the cloud, before it has touched the ground, the Tathaka bird searches for that falling rain and drinks its water. Now you can imagine the Tathaka bird must be thirsty a lot of the time. It won't drink from the ground, from the ocean, from the lakes, from the rivers. Only by searching. And then sometimes, when he's searching for the water from the cloud, a thunderbolt comes. Terrifying. But still, the Tathaka bird, his very nature is he will not drink water from any other source. And therefore, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the Tathaka bird-like devotees, because they sustain themselves simply by the mercy of Krishna, and they won't take anything from any other source. And sometimes, as some of you may have noticed, the thunderbolts come. You want water, you want mercy, and the thunderbolt comes. But a devotee, has anyone ever had that experience? Amongst the, someone's laughing over there. You want mercy, you're so thirsty for some mercy from Krishna, and a thunderbolt comes. Has that ever happened? No, not to. Only to those of us who need strong teachings that happens. But the Tathaka bird-like devotees, they sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain cloud of Krishna. And they are satisfied with that because they know it is coming from the rain cloud of Krishna. Whatever form that mercy comes in, they take it as their sustenance because it is, they feel in it the touch of Krishna. That is what a devotee is. Brahma continues. Gunja berry earrings accent the beauty of your face. Flowers adorn your hair and a peacock feather rests atop your head. This is beautiful Vrindavan Krishna. Brahma's description reveals the superiority of the lowly gunja berries of Braja to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. Just imagine, my dear Prabhus, that Krishna can do anything he wants. He alone in existence is Swatantra. You know what Swatantra means?
Self-contained.
What does Swatantra mean? Independent. He is the only one who is independent. Everyone else is depending upon others. Prabhupada once said, if someone says that they are free, which means independent, it does not speak well for their sanity. Because we are dependent on air to breathe, the water. We depend on so many others. We depend on this, we depend on that. To see even, we are dependent on light. To hear, we are dependent on the element of ether. We are completely dependent, but yet somehow or another, by the power of Maya, we are proud. At least I can say for myself. I do, you know, I get humiliated a million times, and then I do something a little bit good by Krishna's mercy, and suddenly, I'm so wonderful. I hope everyone understands how wonderful I am. Finally, they've understood. I hope. This is the power of Maya. Practically more than anything else, I would say, this is the power of Maya, or one of the most obvious things. We're made a fool of 1,000 times, and then something happens correctly, and suddenly, oh, I'm so wonderful. This is Maya. Illusion. But Krishna is the one who is independent, the only one who's independent. Everything rests on him. Sava karana karanam. Everything rests on him. That means that he can do exactly as he wants. We always have the misery afflicting of our life. I want to do this, I want to do that, but I can't do it because of this reason and that reason and this reason and that reason. But Krishna can do as he likes, and look what he does. Look how he likes to act. He likes to wander through the fields of Vrindavan, and instead of wearing upon his ears the most precious of jewels of Vaikuntha, he prefers these little berries that grow in Vrindavan, and he likes the flowers that grow in the forests of Vrindavan. Think about why. What is it that those gunja berries have that attracts Krishna and his friends to string them and place them upon his ear and around his neck? What is it that the peacock feather has that causes Krishna to take that feather and place it upon his head? Always, whenever you see a picture of Krishna, you always see that peacock feather upon his head. Why? Think about that. And then we will understand how to choose Krishna. What makes Krishna choose this? He can do anything. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur hints at this. And everything is, of course, gradually revealed by the words of the great acharyas. But so Brahma's description reveals the superiority of the lowly gunja berries of Braja to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. The forest garland of wild flowers and leaves around Krishna's neck is superior to those made of the Parijata flowers from Swagaloka, from heaven. By mentioning the morsel of yogurt rice in Krishna's hand, his stick and horn, Brahma indicates the superiority of Krishna's cowherd boyfriends over all others. In mentioning Krishna's soft feet, Mridu Pade, see if you can find where it says that in the verse. What line? Yes, Mridu Pade, his soft lotus feet. Brahma indicates that those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan become filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints. Now, think about this simple point. You see, if you walk outside, probably you'll see so many footprints. And you'll see kangaroo prints, too, probably. And emu prints, yes. But there's no ecstasy. Well, what would cause ecstasy in the residents of Vrindavan? What causes the unlimited heightening of spiritual emotions to blossom forward from the souls of the residents of Vrindavan just by seeing the footprints of Krishna. Think of the person. Everyone close your eyes. Think of the person who you love most in this world. Really, not what you're supposed to, because no one's looking, because everyone's eyes are closed. You have to close your eyes also. I'll even close my eyes. Think of the person you love most in this world. All the persons. Don't you feel happy when you think of them? When you think of someone you love, you naturally feel so happy. And then even when you, if you see the shoes of that person, that's why in the temples we keep shoes of Prabhupada's. Because when you see the shoes, that's the person. It reminds you immediately. So when a Kuru came to Vrindavan, he saw the footprints of Krishna, because the residents of Vrindavan, they respect the footprints of Krishna so much. No one will touch them or step over them or any way smear them, because that's Krishna. And they feel such ecstasy. Oh, Krishna has walked here. Krishna has walked here with the cowherd boys tending the cows. Oh, Krishna has walked by Govardhan Hill. So, Midupadei, Krishna's soft footprints are all over Vrindavan. So the residents of Vrindavan see that and they become ecstatic. Because, why? Because their love for Krishna is everything. That's who they are. They are lovers of Krishna, loving servants of Krishna. And the forms that they have, that's their true nature as loving servants of Krishna. It's a natural manifestation of their love for Krishna. So by stating that Krishna is the son of a cowherd, a pashu, Pashupa Anga Jaya, Brahma shows the superior fortune of Nanda Maharaj even over Vasudev. This is Krishna's beauty, his all-attractive beauty. There are three verses in the Bhagavatam, the Acharyas have stated, that describe Krishna's beauty especially wonderfully. And this is one of them, Brahma's prayer here. And then one of them is in the when the wives of the Brahmins see Krishna, oh, what a wonderful story that is. They come running out because Krishna wants something to eat. He wants some food. And they come running out. And then they had never seen Krishna before. They had only heard about him. And suddenly, right before their eyes, they saw Krishna. And there is a verse that describes what they saw, so beautiful. And then the third verse is in the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, when the gopis, their meditation, they're seeing Krishna and Balaram entering the forest, and that description is also considered topmost. Okay, so we've gone over the first. We're trying to understand, remember, who we're going to hear three sections of the Bhagavad Gita. We're trying to understand who Krishna is. And then tomorrow, we'll hear two more prayers of Brahmas, and we'll get a more complete picture of who Krishna is. And also, we're going to hear something that should be very important to us. And that is, okay, we've heard about Krishna. Okay, now I want to become a devotee, an actual devotee. Give up this pretense that I've been carrying on for 40 years almost. I want to actually become a devotee. I want to serve Krishna. I want to be with Krishna despite all this ignorance that I carry around with me and all these billions of other desires that plague my mind and heart continuously. Now what do I do? So that will be in the third verse. Brahma is going to say just what to do. Okay, so why don't we stop now and take a break? What time does this segment end?
1:30.
Huh? 1:30. Okay, so now it's 12 o'clock, so we can synchronize our watches. What time do you have? Official Melbourne time is? 12:02, okay. So at 12:17, exactly. And at 12:15, maybe how can we tell everyone that we have two more minutes to be sitting? Somehow, maybe you can let everyone know. Thank you. Okay, so Hare Krishna, so 15 minutes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai.